James Herbert, CBS Sports NBA writer, joins us to chat about that now. James, thanks. Always great to have you on the show. So what did the Raptors do so great in the fourth quarter of Game 5 they didn't do in the first part of the series, James? What was the difference?
Just about everything. I did not recognize that team that the Raptors played in the fourth quarter. I mean, part of it was that lineup had never played together before. They had them out there at the beginning of the second quarter. DeRozan, it was four guards, and then Bismack Biyombo at center. And what they were able to do is play really, really tight, solid defense, force turnovers, get on the break, and they spread the floor a little bit. And the Pacers had their worst lineup out there at the beginning of the fourth, and you sort of thought Toronto might make a run because they did the same thing in the second. But I don't think anybody in the building, and I was there, and the mood was just sort of that of resignation, I felt like, among the fans. I don't think anybody felt that something like that was going to happen. I mean, that's one of the all-time playoff comebacks that we'll ever see, scoring 21 of the first 23 points in the quarter, holding Indiana to 9 points in the quarter. It's just very interesting that sort of came out of nowhere. We're looking at the Raptors potentially ending the series in six games if they can close it out in Indiana, which is what I predicted before the series started. But I can't pat myself on the back for that at all, because the way that they've got it has not been anything that I could have foreseen.
So let's talk about, from the Pacers' point of view, how much of this was them choking up in the fourth quarter?
Oh, a ton. The Raptors needed to get a lot of lucky breaks there in the fourth. I mean, they say you make your own luck, and I think the Raptors did play with more intensity, more energy, more focus, all of those lovely things in the fourth than Indiana did. But that doesn't explain Rodney Stuckey just losing the ball for no apparent reason near the baseline and almost falling into Drake's lap. That doesn't explain Solomon Hill just really 1 or 2 tenths of a second from getting off that game-tying three-pointer. The Pacers made some really weird plays, some weird decisions. They got totally bogged down on offense. The Raptors did a good job of making them uncomfortable, but you really need just about everything to go right, and that's what happened for Toronto in the fourth.
James Herbert, CBS Sports with us. I'm Roger Lajoie. Nashville leading Anaheim 2-0. 3:28 to go in the second period. We'll have live look-ins after midnight on that game in the third period, so stick around for that, and you'll hear a lot of that coverage from Sportsnet coming up in our final hour with you as we talk Raptors with James Herbert. So, James, you alluded to the fact that, you know, the look of the team in the fourth quarter changed, different combination, tight defense, and that's been a topic of conjecture and discussion throughout this series, is who starts, who gets the floor time, the combinations. Do you play small? Do you play big? What do you do? We know DeRozan, Lowry, your top player is going to be your top players, but a lot of it comes down to the coaching decision as to who to trot out there. How much of what happened in Game 5 in the fourth quarter changes the kind of rotations and floor time we're going to see in Game 6?
Yeah, it's hard to know because you don't know what Dwayne Casey is going to do. He's been very cagey about his rotations and his lineup decisions the entire playoffs. Nobody found out about the Patrick Patterson shift into the starting lineup until right before the game, even though you could sort of see it coming based on the way the series was going and how much Luis Scola had struggled in the previous game. It's interesting because when Casey talked about the Patterson move after the game and then today again in practice, it's sort of hard to judge it. I mean, Patterson, who's been a plus-minus superstar for Toronto offseason, was minus 20, I believe, in the game, and they made that comeback with him watching on the bench in the fourth quarter. So I'm not sure you'd say that totally worked based on that, but I thought he did do some things. He did provide better spacing. He made a couple of plays off the dribble against Miles Turner that were good, but will Casey go back to Scola in the starting lineup because the Raptors started poorly again in Game 5? I really couldn't tell you.
I don't think anyone could tell us. Maybe Dwayne Casey doesn't even know. Sometimes it's a feel. Sometimes it's a case of how you know, the players respond after a big win like that. The psychological part of this series has been an ongoing talking point as well, James, with good reason. I mean, you know, the Raptors' playoff history speaks for itself. How much of the fact that they won the game in that kind of fashion in Game 5 is going to help them, whether it's Game 6 they finish it off or Game 7? Because, you know, they're certainly hoping and not expecting to lose the playoff series, but that playoff jitters, certainly a comeback like that's got to help, no?
I think you can't help but wish, like, you can't help but watch that film if you're the Pacers and think about how close you were to going home with an opportunity to close it out. That's just human nature. Now, will that affect the way they come out in Game 6? I'm not so sure. I think it's really hard to make that leap from when you're talking about these psychological factors to how they actually play on the court, because all we've been hearing for the last week and a half is how the Raptors have these playoff demons and the ghosts of first-round losses past are still haunting the Raptors. They're supposed to be the team that might choke in a pressure situation, yet they're the team that ends up coming back in the fourth quarter in one of the like weirdest and most ridiculous turns of events in certainly recent playoff history. And Indiana themselves, that team lost a few real heartbreakers throughout the regular season where they just collapsed near the end of games and fell apart. So it's not like there was no precedent for this to happen, but I do think it's decided by the attitude in each individual game more so than it is looking at, you know, past precedents and the momentum that may or may not exist between playoff games. But if you've listened to Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan talk all series long, especially they're getting these questions because they've struggled with shooting. But the one point that they keep going back to is every single playoff game is different. There's X's and O's adjustments that you have to deal with. Certain players will just have it going on some nights and won't otherwise. And that might be to do with psychological factors, but I think it's hard to really pinpoint how that affects either team, as we saw in the last game.
Well, as we saw in the last game, too, DeMar DeRozan, after a very rough start to this series, played his best game, goes without saying, 34 points. And it's stating the obvious, James, but, you know, when DeMar DeRozan is scoring, let's say, 25-plus points a game, the Raptors are going to win more often than not. Does it really come down to, even with all the talk of the adjustments and everything else, and I brought this up the other night, if DeRozan and Lowry outscore George, the Raptors probably win. When they don't, well, then it's a toss-up.
Yeah, it's funny. We end up going back to these storylines of just how will the stars play, and I think a lot of the time that's reductive and too easy, but in this series, a lot of the time that's just been how it's done. And the Raptors' offense, they have really good role players, but they do rely on Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan to do the lion's share of the playmaking, and that's not going to suddenly change in the playoffs. So when they're shooting as horribly as they have been for most of this series, the Raptors are of course going to struggle to score. And I think it's not necessarily about DeMar coming out and scoring 34 points again in the next game. I think it's more about him playing with that same sort of comfort level and being in rhythm like he was in Game 5, because that guy who can like pick apart a defense and is making quick, decisive decisions, that's the guy that was an all-star in the regular season. And the Pacers, because of Paul George's incredible defense and because they also had help waiting for Paul George, if DeMar ever did get past them, they just totally stopped DeRozan from ever really finding that comfort zone. And if he can get a few more assists and maybe not have the 34 points, I think the Raptors will take that as well. But I just think it's going to be very difficult for them to win if he's out there shooting 5 for 19, 6 for 23, and putting up those sort of stat lines. It's possible against the Pacers team, as we've seen, because Indiana struggles offensively itself, but it's going to be a lot easier if he plays with that same sort of mentality that he did in Game 5.
You know Paul George is going to get his points because he just about does every time out, and he is a true star player in this league. Some of the so-called lesser lights on Indiana played significant roles earlier in the series, not as much certainly in Game 5. Maybe talk about who they need to have step up to force a seventh game, James.
Yeah, I look at their starting backcourt. Monte Ellis, it's not even necessarily about the points with him. That helps. But what he does is he pushes the pace for them, no pun intended. When the Pacers run and when they force the Raptors to play transition defense, which they haven't done well in this series, then all of a sudden they have an advantage. Indiana's half-court offense is not very good. It hasn't been very good all season, but Ellis is one of the best in the league at pushing the ball in transition, getting to the basket, and if not scoring himself, then finding shooters for open threes. George Hill, his backcourt partner, is one of those guys that he's really good at sprinting to the corners and making those threes, and he got a ton of open looks in Game 5 at the beginning, and what Toronto did is they did a lot better job staying with him in the second half, and I'm not even sure if George Hill scored in the third or fourth quarters of that game at all. And I really think the Pacers are a better team when he's attacking He had a huge role last year when Paul George was out with injury, and that's been lessened this year with George back and with Ellis in the fold. But for Indiana, I think they're a much, much, much better team when Ellis is pushing the ball in transition and when George Hill is a threat, so Paul George doesn't have to do it all himself.
James, I hate to even bring this up, but I'm going to bring it up because I want your view on it. When we talk about what's at stake here, for this franchise in this series, and it seems to be stating it maybe overdramatic, but I don't think it's overdramatic. If the Pacers come back, win the series, I mean, do the wheels come off the bus? Is this a case of then you have to rethink DeRozan, especially if he really struggles in game 6 and 7, or maybe they look at, you got to do something after, whether it's coaching or something, after losing 3 straight years in the playoffs. Flip side, they win the series, all is right with the world. Maybe just talk about how important it is that the Raptors do finish these guys off.
Oh, I think it's extremely important. That's been one of the more interesting parts of covering this series as opposed to some other first-round series that are going on right now, is there are extreme stakes for at least one of these teams. If Toronto doesn't get past the first round, that's 3 years in a row that they've sort of thought they were going to make that leap and they couldn't get it done. That's 3 years in a row of losing to a team that wasn't seeded as highly as them. And I think with this Pacers matchup, the Raptors are very clearly the more talented team, and we've seen that all series long. Now, I'm not sure that means necessarily that Dwayne Casey won't be back. I'm not sure that means necessarily that DeMar DeRozan won't be back. I think if I was a betting man, I'd bet on each of those possibilities being, more than 50% that they would be back. But what it does do, if they end up messing this up and they can't close the Pacers out in Indiana and they lose Game 7 like they did 2 years ago, then I think all of those discussions start happening. They start happening immediately, and they start happening pretty loudly.
Finally, let's take a minute or two, talk about the rest of the East playoffs. Charlotte with a big win in Miami tonight. Atlanta and Boston, been a back-and-forth series, but the Hawks have a 3-2 lead trying to close it out in Boston. And the Cleveland Cavaliers just took care of business, kind of putting the foot down. I think anybody who, was predicting the demise of Cleveland and LeBron James in the playoffs, they still got to be the overwhelming favorites, James, especially now with an easy first-round series under their belts. But your thoughts on what Charlotte has been able to do with to Miami, and is Atlanta in any kind of difficulty with Boston?
Yeah, those are the two series that I had the most trouble predicting before the playoffs started, and they have been back and forth. I didn't expect the Atlanta game to be as one-sided as it was last night. Charlotte got a key victory tonight, but that was a really wild game. The finish was back and forth, and the Heat were complaining about a couple of calls that they felt didn't go their way, and that could have easily been a Miami victory. Dwayne Wade had a huge game, and it just came down to Courtney Lee grabbing a huge offensive rebound and hitting a three, and funnily enough, it was the second game in a row that Courtney Lee, a trade deadline acquisition the Hornets made, came in and got a huge offensive rebound that really swung the game. I've been incredibly impressed with how the Hornets have played this season, how they've completely changed their identity to become a three-point shooting team. And I think the interesting thing about this series is the Heat have basically tried to take away the Hornets' three-point shooting in every game. This was really the first night where they managed to find any rhythm at all. So they've had to kind of reinvent themselves on the fly during this series, which is sort of what the playoffs are about, and it's why it makes these series so interesting. As for Boston-Atlanta, I mean, Boston is undermanned right now. As soon as Avery Bradley went down, then they all of a sudden became the obvious underdog in the series. Kelly Olynyk, because of his injury, his shoulder injury, hasn't been able to contribute much either, but I do think they've shown fight. The last game accepted, I thought, when they had those two games at home, Marcus Smart played incredibly in the absence of Avery Bradley, did that on both ends of the court, and they're going to need more of that from him, and they're going to need Isaiah Thomas to continue to play like an all-star as well, but he hurt his ankle in the last game too. So it's a tough road for them. I would never want to count a Brad Stevens team out, because I think a lot of people already did that when Bradley went out, and then they went and they won two games at home.
Yes, so you never know indeed, and you never know what will happen Friday night when the Raptors and Pacers play Game 6 in Indianapolis in what has been a fascinating series, to say the least, so far. James Herbert, CBS Sports NBA writer, joining us to chat about it tonight. James, always fun to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rod.